Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:17 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is April 27th. So Microsoft today finished higher and following through on the upside, following the upside surprise to earnings, and then the very bullish guidance that they offered based upon their assumption that artificial intelligence is going to be a major driver for efficiency gains and then revenue growth. Then Meta came through with earnings, and they were also very positive as the earnings start to recover. So the share was up in a dynamic manner. Now, Microsoft's trend is a lot more consistent than Meta's. The dalliance with virtual reality was really punished, or punished Meta platforms in 2022. Now that they are dialing back on the Metaverse and dialing up their concentration on their core business, the share is recovering, but it's been an exceptionally steep advance. Then Amazon just reported earnings and they were stronger than anticipated. So the share is up about $12 in the after hours and trading up to about 121. So that will take it quite a bit above the 200-day moving average for the first time, really. In this year, and really since the beginning of 2022, there have only been a couple of times when it traded above it, and then for only a very brief period. So, earnings within the large cap sector have done quite well, and also they're giving positive guidance. And Amazon talking about machine learning, and obviously that's another string in the AI sector. So then Nvidia, which has been the go-to share for the artificial intelligence investors, has been pausing. Now, it's I think worth considering that the company is not going to report earnings for at least another month, all the way out to May 24th. So we might have to wait a while. But I think an earnings surprise has probably been priced in. And then Apple won't be reporting until the middle of May either, but it was in positive territory as well in here today. So now let's just look at what this looks like for the FAANG Man relative to the wider market index. Because we've had these very dynamic moves in exceptionally large cap companies, so the ratio now has popped up into the overhead trading range, and in fact, it is now approaching the upper side of that trading range. But what I found especially interesting is that if we look at the advanced decline line for the NASDAQ composite, it's making new lows. So it's not quite the same as what we've seen, for example, with the advanced decline line for the NYSE. This has been in negative territory for a prolonged period. But there was a good long time between 2016 and 2021 when your average share in the NASDAQ composite was rising, and or there were more shares rising than falling. And that persisted for 6 years. And then it stopped in 2022, and it hasn't really improved in 2023. Now, that's a clear indication of narrowing breadth within the NASDAQ. Now, let's just look at that from the perspective of NYSE securities. And it has not broken downwards. It is testing the sequence of higher reaction lows and the region of the 200-day moving average. But it really is now the point at which we need to see some demand coming back in. Now, it isn't just the large cap companies that are doing better. McDonald's, for example, has popped on the upside in a very dynamic manner. And in their earnings, what they were basically saying was that their concentration on loyalty programs has enhanced the reliability of their earnings. So that's certainly filtering down. What we've also seen is within the last month, McDonald's has opened their first fully automated restaurant. And that does appear to be where the future is. But let's just contrast that with the performance of the restaurants ETF. And yes, it has bottomed, and it's quite likely that the low in June of last year was meaningful, but we haven't really seen a stout recovery. Now, there have certainly been strong performances from companies like Chipotle and also from Yum Brands, where they are either breaking on the upside or on the cusp of breaking on the upside. So, Yum Brands, for example, is testing its peak in here today. So, but what this definitely highlights is that there is a concentration of attention within the very dominant companies within any given sector, and that breadth in the market is deteriorating. So, how do you explain what's going on right now, where you have very strong performance from some companies, mundane performance from others, and a banking sector that is under quite severe stress? Now, the S&P 500 banks were in positive territory today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. And then the regional banks were also in positive territory, but and there is the potential that this is, and it does have falling wedge characteristics. So we may be at approaching a low here for the regional banks. They're probably going to need some kind of bullish catalyst, but we certainly have the sequence of lower rally highs, and we're starting to see failed downside breaks. So there is the potential that the trade here is actually to be long the regional banks, that they could actually pop on the upside and potentially unwind the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Quite how long that range, though, right now persists for is unknowable. And we are definitely seeing that the 10-year yield is still steady around the 3.5% level, and yields were higher in here today. So we have economic activity where companies are reporting that demand has increased. And what we've seen from economic statistics is that the bulk of the increase in demand was in the beginning of the first quarter, and that it has moderated through to the end of the first quarter. Then we know that GDP growth estimates have contracted, and they're down now to about 1.1%. And then we know that inflation and the PCE year over year has risen. So it hasn't continued to trend downwards, and we're still hovering around the 4.6% level. Well, if GDP growth is at 1.1% and inflation is running at 4%, well, then you have negative real growth of 3.5%. Now, in any other world, that would be considered a recession. But what we have, in fact, therefore, the only way to possibly rationalize that kind of activity is that this is an inflationary boom where companies have got back some of their pricing power. They are raising their prices, and that is cutting into the spending power of the consumer, so that it is the dominant companies have been able to boost themselves, whereas others have not. And because we ha still have robust economic activity from those larger companies, then unemployment has not gone up. And of course, that has also been very much affected by the fact that there are large numbers of open jobs, and that there are a lot of people who have retired. So we did have a pop on the upside in the jobless rate between January and March, but since then it has not been trending higher. So the retirement rate, the number of open jobs, have not yet been eroded sufficiently to really put a cap on the, or I guess, it's the wrong way to say it is a cap on, but to actually stop the employment rate from rising faster. So it is inevitable, though, that the higher interest rates go, the longer the credit remains tight for, the greater the pressure will come to bear on the wider market. And it is, I think, most especially true that the 10-year minus the 3-month was at a new low, and we haven't seen lows in anywhere close to these levels since the early 1980s. But it is still contracting. We're down at a negative 163 basis points. Generally speaking, the stock market remains really quite steady as long as the yield curve spread is contracting. It's only when it starts rising, and then rising in a dynamic manner, that pressure comes to bear on stocks, because it's at that point that you have central banks acting with alacrity to try and forestall a contraction in the economy, so they cut rates. And then investors tend to take fright, because that is clear confirmation that there really is trouble in the wider market. So then, I think it's just worth considering when we look at the performance of the world equity indices. Even though we've had a strong performance in stocks, the Dow Jones is really only up 2% on the year. The Nasdaq Composite is up 16%, and the Nasdaq 100 is up in excess of 20%. But the Mexican index is up 20% on a currency-adjusted basis. So the weakness of the dollar has certainly enhanced the performance of several markets, but most particularly in the French market, the German market, and the Spanish market, the Swedish, excuse me, the Italian market, and the Swedish market. They're all up in excess of the S&P 500 this year. And the Japanese market, because of the strength, or excuse me, the weakness of the yen, has actually been less impressive. And then, despite the rebound we've seen in activity in China, the stock market really hasn't been going anywhere. So investors do appear to be voting with their feet as the dollar depreciates. So the Euro Stoxx index, though, was in negative territory this week so far, and it's a bit overbought in the short term. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some pause in consolidation. And of course, what happens with the dollar is going to have a very large bearing on how investors see opportunities around the world. So the dollar index is right in the region of its lows. It's encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and this continues to look like a downtrend. When we look at some of the emerging markets, the Mexican ETF is right in the region of the upper side of the short-term range, but it does look like it's on the cusp of breaking on the upside. When we think about Argentina, well, in Argentina, they've just raised interest rates to an historic high. And for a disaster, or an economic disaster-prone country like Argentina, an all-time high in interest rates is quite the headline. But what's interesting is that the GlobalX MSCI Argentina ETF, which is populated by Argentinian companies listed abroad, has popped up out of this 5-year range. And it's pausing here, but this does look like a reasonably consistent, or a reasonably convincing, breakout from a base formation. I'm going to stick with some of these ETFs just to show performance on a constant currency basis. So the Indonesian ETF is now right on the region of the upper side of its range. And it does have the potential to break on the upside if the Indonesian rupiah continues to appreciate. And it is appreciating in a reasonably dynamic manner. Then let's think about the Vietnamese market. So a major beneficiary overall of a flow of foreign investment out of China. And the performance of the ETF was severely impacted in 2022, but it is now back in the region of the lows from back in 2015, and not all that far away from the lows in 2020, and has a succession of higher reaction lows, so potentially starting to appreciate here. And then let's think about India. So the Nifty index has been quite steady, and it was in positive territory today. Now the difference with for India versus some of these other countries is that the rupee has been quite weak, so that has impacted the performance of foreign funds investing there. But the rupee is beginning to appreciate, and at the iShares India ETF is popping back above 40, and that is increasingly starting to look like a failed downside break. So the Indian rupee is right in the cusp of testing the dollar's sequence of higher reaction lows in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, in order to really instill confidence, it's probably going to have to strengthen through the 200-day moving average. And if we see a period of outperformance by the rupee, then that has generally coincided with a great deal of bullish interest in the Indian market. Now, with a large young population and an administration that really is intent on trying to break some of the sclerotic bureaucratic roadblocks to economic growth and infrastructure development, there is the potential that India can do well. Of course, it is an enormous challenge when you have such a congested city environment, an acute need to urbanize a large population, to modernize agriculture, and then to further improve sanitation and water infrastructure. There's a laundry list of challenges that need to be addressed. But it is the trend of governance is the most important. So, what happens in terms of the currency will be a reflection of that. Now, when we then think about what's going on in China, well, we saw today, for example, that can't remember which country it was that might be banning the export of chemicals for the production of computer chips to China. And that is just a further indication of the rising geopolitical tensions between China and NATO, or I guess the broad Western administrative area, or let's just call it perhaps the OECD. And we've also seen that the USA will be stationing a nuclear submarine off the coast of South Korea. Now that is directly in trade for a commitment from South Korea not to develop their own nuclear arsenal. But what it certainly ensures is that there are nuclear weapons on both North Korea's and China's borders. Now the South Korean index is beginning to steady and has broken out to break its sequence of lower rally highs in the 2-year downtrend. So it is looking more positive, and of course that is inextricably linked with the performance of Samsung, and that is also steadying here from the region of the 200-day moving average. So we've had a really significant downtrend, 2 years in the downside for Samsung. It does look like it has broken that downtrend. So certainly we're seeing a lot more interest and certainly more bullish action in the stock market. And yet we still have tightening liquidity conditions around the world. And those are mutually incompatible trends. So it can't last indefinitely. Either we're going to see central banks dialing back and providing more liquidity in an effort to forestall a recession, or a recession is going to break and then they'll be forced to. But one would help to cushion corporate earnings, one would not, or would one would belatedly help to cushion corporate earnings. And the underperformance of the banking sector and the fact that the 2-year yield is now also starting to steady here having really pulled back exceptionally violently in March. The yield has held a sequence of higher reaction lows for a month. It's back above 4%, steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this is basically the bond market beginning to price in that the terminal rate for interest rates might be somewhat higher, and having had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, it is quite normal to see a period of right-hand extension where we get some ranging that could potentially be prolonged. And that is in response to people really asking the question, has anything really changed? But that is a very clear downward dynamic and big weekly downside key reversal with follow through. So it is quite likely that the peak for the 2 year is around 5%. That also then suggests that the Fed funds rate might yet rally further, and it might even go up to 5.5%, but that the 2 year yield is unlikely to exceed 5%. And that suggests that the terminal rate isn't really all that far away, or that when interest rates do rise, they're not going to stay up there for very long. So there is obviously risk in this market, but stocks are quite strong. And I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside as long as that yield curve spread continues to invert. I think the time to be particularly vigilant is when it stops inverting. And then, as we think about the underperformance of the dollar, the gold price continues to pause here in the region of the $2,000 level. Investors are clearly favoring Bitcoin, and it was up $1,200 in here today. Now, there was some rumors that the Mt. Gox custodian of all those stolen Bitcoin might be selling some, and that contributed to volatility 2 weeks ago, but the price is now pushing up towards the 30,000 level. And then oil prices were a little steadier in here today, but this remains an impaired trend, and the broad pattern of behavior is still on the downside. That suggests that demand globally is falling. And then, of course, we have copper prices. We're also a little steadier in here today and steady in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming since the beginning of the year. But it's got to do a lot more than that to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then some of the soft commodities are pulling back, and corn is rolling over now and has clearly encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average and dropped downwards in here today. And then sugar has been one that has been particularly firm, and it was in positive territory in here today. But this is, I think, more a reflection of what's happening in a particular market. So the lack of available supply to export from India, and then the activity that we're seeing in Brazil. But it is very overbought in the short term, and coming up into an historic area of potential resistance. We've definitely seen these kinds of spiky moves in sugar in the past, and we can give the benefit of the doubt until to the upside until we see a clear downward dynamic. We did have a limit down move in orange juice yesterday, and it was off its lows in here today. So pausing for the moment and at least finding support in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. But this might just be softening up activity. So certainly there's a lot of activity in markets. And I think that today was very clearly a risk on day, but this is an inflationary boom. And what is in effect happening is that people are pulling forward their estimates of or their spending decisions from the future. Now, To the extent that happens with the services sector, where there's ongoing financial commitments or people have to pay for something every month, it's not going to have a lot of effect. But for durable goods, that acceleration of buying, that's really just pulling sales forward from the future. And what it basically suggests is that eventually those sales from the future will dry up into a tightening credit environment. And then you'll see that there won't be as much sales into a rising credit environment. And that's really where recessions kick off. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.